Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Mastercraft has been making high-quality doors for more than 50 years. Choose from Menards' great in-stock selection or design your door your way in-store and online using our free, easy-to-use design program. Visit Menards.com/doors and start your design today. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 707. It's the 10th of February, 2017. On the podcast today, I have Andrea Cattaneo, CEO of Zenith Energy, that's Z-E-N, talks about the commencement of the workover of wells M195 and M45 in Azerbaijan. Also on the podcast today, Mark Epstein, co-founder and CEO of the People's Operator, T-Pop, explains the business and says he's looking forward to its 2017 prospects. Plus, I have Russ Mould, investment director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talking about the following stocks: Watkins Jones, that's WJG, GB Group, GBG, and Card Factory, Card. I've heard Russ on lots of things, and he's a sharp man, and he knows his stuff, and I'm glad he's on the podcast. I really am. Plus, also, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about advanced oncotherapy, conviviality, safe style, and Asia Met Resources. Plus, I also have, of course, the top five the most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. Plus, the top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andrea Cattaneo, CEO of Zenith Energy. That's ticker Z-E-N. Andrea, thanks very much for coming back on.
Thank you for your time. I'm glad to be with you explaining what is happening in the development of Zenith.
Yeah, well, do you know, I'll always remember our first interview with you because you were live from the London Stock Exchange, and that was, what, January 11th, I think? So here we are, almost a month down the line. Your share price is just over 40% up from its listing price, which is going in the right direction. But for people not aware of what you do at Zenith, what the business is all about, Andreas, can you give us a brief summary as to what it's all about, please?
We are a developer of large field, unpampered by majors. So our philosophy is always to take a field that has a very strong upside and potential and to dedicate all our attention and focus that was lacking before. So this field we have in Azerbaijan is the biggest field of the country, onshore, is 642 square kilometers. And has already 100 wells that are in part producing and in part suspended. So the name of the game for the first 2 years is to make workovers. Mm-hmm. We have recently raised some additional bit of money on the 30th of January, and immediately after that raise, the board has decided to double the investment in workover. So initially we thought to have only one team running a rig, workover rig, for a consecutive stream of working operation up to 10 per team. Now we have two teams, and so we will make this year hopefully 20 workovers of 20 different wells. So, yeah. We have a plan to achieve 1,000 barrels for the 31st of March 2018. So time is only now 14 months, and we have to use every second of it. And so finally today, there has been a little bit of snow, which delayed our demobilization and mobilization exercise from Baku, where the rig was located, to our field, which is 200 plus kilometers. And so because of the snow, we have lost 2-3 days in respect of the standard time. And so today, finally, we have started the true operations in the field, in the well that has been mentioned, 195. And we have as well dispatched in Twitter a picture of the equipment in operation. So we want to keep our investors well kept informed, but without making a sort of stirring too much of excitement, but just informing that we are making 20 workover operation, and so we are achieving a statistical effect of averaging the success and the partial insuccess that they may happen. And so that is the situation. We are entering this transformational phase in which we should triple, hopefully, our production.
Wow, there's a lot of information there, Andres. Let's break it down. So essentially, you've got the biggest field in Azerbaijan, a very oily area. This isn't your only asset, but right now it's your asset of priority. And so you've decided, rather than go with one well workover, you've gone with two. So why have you decided to go with two then? I know you have this target of 1,000 barrels a day by end of March next year. By the way, what are you at the moment? What is your production level at the moment?
300.
So almost more than tripling that. And so is this because you decided to have two wells being worked over to easily hit that target, or is it just because you've raised money and you thought you can do two, it's no problem? Why is this?
A combination of the factor that you have just mentioned. We raised money, so we thought that it was better to have a double punch to the task. And then we hope to under-promise and over-deliver. So that is a very important factor that we keep in mind. And then the best was to have a parallel game of two teams, Team A and Team B, that they will attack a portfolio of equally complicated or non-complicated wells, in a way that there is a good balance between the two teams. And it's good as well to have some internal competition in our company between the two teams, which is always healthy and promoting people enthusiasm and commitment.
Yeah, I like that idea, having two separate teams, one internally, one externally, and putting them up against each other almost to get things done on time.
Absolutely.
I like that.
Absolutely.
It's very good. We thrive on competition. I love that. So, like I said, at the moment, you run about 300 barrels a day. Now, it's easy to do the math here, I suppose, because nice round figures, so you're going to go up to hopefully 1,000 barrels a day. And what are your operating costs? I'm looking at your market cap. It's just over 10 million. So what are your operating costs, Andre, there?
Thank you for this question. It's the main beauty of Azerbaijan and our field is that we have a very low OPEX proportionally. At the today rate of production, 300, our operating cost for barrel per barrel is $16. But we have projected that with the increase in production, as the majority of costs are fixed, our cost, OPEX per barrel, will go down to $10. So that is a very interesting thing when we consider that Ural, which is the oil we sell, the crude oil we sell in the international market, is today reaching the $52-$53 mark.
Yeah, wow. And do you know what? I like that because it's quite easy for someone to get a calculator out and do some basic maths on how much you should be making off that when you hit that, 1,000 barrels a day in March. And they could see at this level, we can see that's a good value proposition here. There's a lot of upside, isn't there?
And indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
And so how confident are you of hitting that 1,000 barrels of oil a day by March?
Well, first we have to stress again that is March 2018.
Yes,
I don't want it to be misinterpreted that we will do it in 2 months. That is not the case.
No.
In 14 months, we can do it. There are some wells that they have tremendous potential. So three or four of them can make the game alone. Is always the mystery of the underground. We don't know what we will find there in terms of technical complexity and problem to solve. But we are confident, especially with the new team, Team B addition, that we are on track not to disappoint our investors.
Yeah, but I suppose though we're talking about here is low risk. So you're not an explorer, you're a producer here, and we know there's oil there, and so essentially it's just working over these wells to get them up to their optimum levels again, isn't it? Because they've been doing this previously, haven't they? But over years of a lack of sort of technical, you know, investment here from the Russians or whatever, they've basically declined, haven't they, in their production rates. So essentially, yes, the oil's there, it just needs to be invested in. Is that the case?
Absolutely. We are not inventing the wheel. We don't need to be genius. It's just a question to execute with success these 20 workover and a little bit of luck. The field, I remember to the investors, was producing at a certain time 15,000 barrels per day. So then we are speaking about a very oily field, as you define it. And on top of that is a field where the majority of the wells today produce without any pumping. So by natural pressure of the reservoir, which is obviously still very strong. So we are not speaking about a mature field that is at the end of its life. We are speaking about a field that has many years still of potential proportion.
Excellent. Well, Andre, on the podcast every day, I highlight the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets, and your company has been amongst that top five quite a few times of late. But for people who aren't following you, could you give us three bullet points as to why they should hit that follow button, please, on your page?
The main three differentiation of our stock in respect to our peers are, A, we are a developer of a proven very large field where there are very large reserves, and we have simply to pull it out of the ground, but without the risk to discover if they are there or not. The second is that we have the financial resources. We have raised some additional capital, and now we cannot raise anymore because we have used all the space permitted by the regulation of the standard list, which is only 10% per annum. So we have used this facility, but we have the ability to create cash with the profit from the sale of our oil. And third is that we are very committed to bring in the company to another stage of development. Let's remember that we have a capital market capitalization of only £10 million, and of course if we reach the £1,000, it will be a total different music, and for that the team is very motivated and is totally committed to fight to arrive to this target.
Marvellous, Andrea. I'd love to chat to you. And like I said, you've got a busy work program on there, so no doubt we'll be chatting again in the near future. But until then, thank you very much for coming on.
I look forward. Take care.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Mark Epstein, co-founder and CEO of the People's Operator. That's TPOP ticker. Mark, thanks for joining me.
Hi, good to be here.
Well, listen, we've had a lot of requests saying, get these guys on. You are getting some traction here, and you came on my radar a couple of weeks back, so it's very good to get you on and speak to you personally. So first and foremost, Mark, can you explain in a summary what the People's Operator is all about as a business, please?
Yeah, no problem at all. So we are a phone network. We are a virtual network, which means that instead of owning all the large base stations and heavy kit, we lease those from technical providers. We enter into deals with other companies. We are a phone network that is live in the UK and the US. We operate in the largest markets in the world. We're a consumer proposition. We have a great proposition where 10% of your phone bill every month can go to the calls of your choice. We are growing extremely rapidly. Our technology platform was developed by one of the greats of the internet, one of the sort of geniuses of the internet, Jimmy Wales, who founded Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. And that's us, basically. We're a phone network that operates UK, US. We've been going now for about 2 years. And it's now quite an exciting time for us.
Yeah, well, let's break it down, because you came up my radar and I was looking at this, and I went through all your RNSs, and I was looking at your recent update, which you say you expect to have 3.6 million revenue for the full year. Yeah. And I see your cash burn is coming down, and at the start there, I think you floated about £1.30, £1.40 or something. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We floated. So, I mean, I can take you back, actually, if you'd like, to give you a bit of history of the business.
Go on, go for it.
How we came to be. And all that. So I co-founded the business with two friends of mine. Tom Guttridge is a long-term business partner of mine, and another good friend of mine, Andrew Rosenfeld, who previously had another quoted company in the sector in property, which was valued around 700 million. Mm. We both were involved with technology, communications, and the calls-based industry.
Yeah.
And we were thinking, look, there's a lot of challenges for the calls-based industry. You know, and we had this idea of what if we can take something, a commodity, something that everybody has, and sort of turn it into a force for good, but also create a profitable company.
Yeah.
So create this really great, profitable, sort of utility that did good, but a for-profit one. And so we came up with this idea. It wasn't called TPO at the time. It was this thing, what about if a percentage went to charity? And then we stress tested. We did the business testing for months and months and months. And then we basically started it privately. Andrew had a private sort of equity side. He had his own investment arm. And we funded it through that. And it was growing really well. So we had all these amazing, we did all this amazing testing. We were getting very low cost per acquisition. We were seeing that, you know, there was a good potential word of mouth story. We saw a lot of causes wanted to promote our product to their supporters and members. We saw a lot of families and would like to give the SIM and take the SIM to their kids and things like that as well. And they liked the idea. And then sort of it was growing sort of quite nicely. And then basically Andrew knew Jimmy Wales, the founder of Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Knew him socially, and he'd been telling Jimmy about the company. Like, maybe Jimmy was getting more and more interested. And then, you know, one day was, you know, sat down and said, look, you know, we could be this great thing. This could be this great global brand potentially. And, you know, we should just do this big, because Jimmy doesn't do anything small, Wikipedia and everything like that. And he said, look, we've got to do this, but I want to be involved in something big, you know, not just a UK telco. Mm. You know, let's make this could have real potential. And so, you know, he basically thought we could build these amazing viral growth tools to tap into people's passions about charity, causes, about, you know, and we could build those. And, you know, instead of doing big TV adverts, big marketing, billboards, we could use digital tools, use these great tools that he could create to grow our brand globally. And he said, look, we need to do that. We need to launch in another country, in the US, biggest telco market in the world. It's one of the best markets in the world. In terms of ARPU, the revenue, the average revenue in the US is pretty much twice what it is in the UK. You've got great margins there. So, you know, it's a great territory to operate in as a phone network. So we said, great. So, you know, let's do this. And then, of course, we looked at funding. How are we going to fund this?
Yeah.
And, you know, there are various options on the table to us. As you can imagine, there was private equity from the West Coast that we could have taken, no trouble. Jimmy could have got. But then we thought, well, look, we don't need that. That's sort of quite expensive money. They say they've got contacts and all that. It's one of the reasons why, Mark, it's something you only read about in the papers going on the West Coast, normally, of America.
Yeah, yeah.
So we took the option, very ambitious option, and we floated in the end. You know, it took us a while, but we floated in the end, and the valuation, as you say, was £1.30 at float.
Yeah, so there was some technical issues, was there, at the start, when you first started in America?
There was a number of things, actually. It was a number of things, and it was really quite tragic. So the first thing is that in our business case at the float at 1:30, we were targeted we were on target to launch in March 2015.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, we floated in December. December it was 14.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, late January 15, I think it was, Andrew, one of my business co-founders, business partners, long-term friend, passed away.
Yeah.
Tragically passed away suddenly, and the issue with that was he owned 56% of the company.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was really quite tragic, and that caused a knock-on effect, really, that delayed our launch to some degree. And our launch was delayed, and in the end, there were a number of technical issues, and the launch got delayed till I think it wasn't July, late July.
Yeah, yeah.
We launched in the end 2015.
Yeah.
And we launched late July 2015. And during that time, with the technical issues as well, we sort of had, so first there was Andrew, who is, you know, chairman as well, major shareholder, which in itself causes issues when that happens in a telco, especially in the US. And then you've got all the technical problems, which are the main sort of thing. Then along with that, the Sprint, who was our main phone network partner in the US, were taken over by SoftBank.
Yeah.
And what they've done is they put a new CEO in, and a lot of the technical components, the wholesale proposition they had, that they had, changed. So that's what caused the stuff, the technical issues when we launched. So basically, we launched late. So we launched in July. So all the time, you know, that was a late launch. And then once we did launch, we found out we had all these technical problems. But when we did launch, Jimmy went over there. So we have, he's massively well known in the US. We got a ton of press coverage when we launched, and we launched about, you know, late July 15. We got this amazing coverage in the US. You know, we did this press sort of tour. Jimmy did all the TV shows. We were on, you know, all the US national breakfast shows. We were on Fox News. We were live from the New York Stock Exchange, all this stuff. You know, amazing. We've got thousands upon thousands of people visiting the US site to buy a product. But unfortunately, about 90-something% of them, it was the computer was saying no because of technical issues.
Oh, no.
So that was a real issue for us. So we got massive traction, massive coverage. We got huge charities that wanted to push our product. You know, huge charities, biggest, but also loads of small ones. So the proposition went down really well. And this is what we always knew. The underlying proposition, the brand, was very, very strong. We knew that from the UK, it had been going well. But in the US, it was incredible. And the coverage we were getting was great, but we couldn't harness it. So, okay, well, look, we're going to need to fix this. So we thought, well, look, we're obviously going to take our time and fix it with Sprint, but we might need another network deal as well. So we've got two phone networks in the US. And that basically, we thought, so we were fixing the Sprint issues, and then we got another phone network partner in the US. That takes always a little bit of time to set up. And then basically all the while, of course, you know, our original targets that we had for revenue, you know, as has been reported, we couldn't hit, because although we were operating in the UK and revenue was growing nicely there, our biggest market, the market that we'd slated about 80-something% of our revenue to come from, wasn't really giving us anything. It was hardly giving us anything at all. So we're like, look, so then we had the other network target launching in March last year. Mm-hmm. So basically we're waiting to see how that went. And so we got that all set up, and then we launched that, I think, the end of March last year.
Yeah.
And that was a big sort of wait and see moment for us, because we knew there was a lot of demand for the product. We could see the brand, and it was so frustrating for us in the business. You know, and during that time, we had to take a lot of tough decisions to reduce our costs, to control the burn rate, to really become super efficient.
Yeah.
But, you know, but we developed, it was so frustrating, because we developed this amazing sales platform, this amazing sort of digital platform that Jimmy built to grow virally. And so anyway, so we were waiting. At the end of March, we launched on the other network as well. We'd in the meantime fixed a lot of the issues that we had in Sprint, so we know they were getting fixed as well. And then when it launched, we waited to see how it went. And actually since then, and this is the really exciting thing for us, so we've waited to see how it went. And since then, it's gone really, really well. So it was, for us, a brilliant relief to see. Yeah. But since then, it's been completely different. And now we're getting back into alignment with our original business case.
Excellent. So scroll forward, essentially. And right now, as we talk, everything technically is working. You've got demand happening. Is that the case? And your cash burn is down. Your revenues are growing. Yeah. And so essentially, you were very excited about 2017?
Yeah, 2017 is looking great. So we had a really good, you know, third quarter, fourth quarter, 2016. This quarter, you know, has been, you know, as we're seeing great growth month on month. You know, what we expected to see now, we're seeing, you know, when we really, really, it's amazing, really, because of course for us, the technical platform is all built. It's all there. You know, Jimmy's got a great track record, Wikipedia, and he knows how to build viral growth technical platforms.
Yeah,
for us, you know, and it's just sitting there, it was sitting there sort of, you know, the engine on sort of, you know, ticking over, waiting to be revved up a bit. We're really, really, the benefit is coming back to us. So we invested a lot of money in that. A lot of our money that we raised was invested in that area. And now that sort of capital expenditure we made is really, really coming good for us. And it's coming round now back the other side.
Well, I've noticed, because it's an interesting dynamic of cash burn coming down, revenue going up, and at one point we're going to hit inflection. I think we've seen a bottom in the share price. Like, we went down to 3.5p or something. It was ridiculous.
Well, that was crazy.
Yeah.
When you know, we've got, you know, it was, that was a crazy price. I mean, consider what, you know, we've got significant funds, obviously, anyway, just cash funds, and you know, that we have, plus our revenue, you know, is in the hundreds of thousands every month and going up very quickly. So it was just the sort of
UK and America. So where's, I mean, which is the most exciting place at the moment, growth wise? Is it America?
Well, US, and the whole business is always about the US.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is what, you know, we're sitting in the company, seeing this sort of take off, you know, just as we'd hoped it would, back obviously a bit almost 2 years late. Mm-hmm. But once it's off, it's off. In the US, the largest market in the world, and it's the best market because it's not only is it the biggest. You saw, you know, you can charge almost twice as much in the US to what you can charge in the UK.
Yeah.
The market, you know, it's a lot more money. So, you know, you're getting, you know, almost double the revenue per subscriber that you get in the UK in some cases.
Excellent.
And so the margins are great. It's a great territory to operate in.
Yeah.
As a telco.
So are you able to sort of qualify maybe growth-wise? I mean, a month-to-month, not in monetary terms, but maybe percentage terms. What is the growth like at the moment?
Well, at the moment, you know, I won't go into the exact details, but I'll tell you, at the moment we're seeing, you know, as we hoped and hope to expect, you know, above single digit growth.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Which we expected to see, and you know, we're really pleased now to see that coming back into the business.
Excellent. All right, Mark. Well, do you know what? It's great to have you on. Listen, at Fox Markets every day in the podcast, I highlight top five most followed companies. You have been in that list a couple of times in the last week or so. But for people not following TPOP right now, could you give us sort of three bulleted points as to why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Yeah, I mean, look, first one, we are a phone network that is live and running in two of the biggest markets in the world, the UK and the US. We're a UK company that has got a great brand and a phone network offering in the US. Secondly, we've got a technical platform built by one of the internet greats, the geniuses, the Wikipedia founder, Jimmy Wales, that is now being able to harness all of its potential. And thirdly, this is a massive opportunity. It's mobile. It's not going anywhere. You know, mobile usage is only set to grow. So the potential of this market can only get bigger. So, you know, it was always the case that, you know, once we could get it going, the potential is unlimited. And the platform Jimmy built is built to scale into other territories as well, which obviously we're not doing at the moment. But, you know, unless somebody thinks the mobile phone industry is going anywhere, this business is a long, long, long sustainable business, cash business, that, like other telcos, could grow and grow and grow and grow.
Yeah, yeah, and I suppose to add to that, you are a shareholder yourself, so where you have interest in the, and a co-founder as well. So, Mark, it's been great to chat to you. And when is your next update? On the trading or fully update?
The next trading update, we're putting one out for sure around the end of March.
Okay.
Time, I think early April is when our next one's scheduled.
Excellent. Well, it sounds quite bullish. Now, you, in a previous RNS, when was this? On the 25th of January, you said full year will be approximately 3.6 million. And we'll be interested to see what the trading is like since then. So, Mark, lovely to chat to you. And hopefully we'll speak again very soon.
Great. Thank you. Good to speak to you as well.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell. Russ, thank you for coming on.
It's a pleasure, Justin. Thank you for having me.
Now, I've heard you on lots of different things, and I thought, this guy knows what he's talking about. I get him on the podcast. And by the way, getting people who know what they talk about on the podcast isn't a prerequisite. I host the thing. But, you know, so,
no, that's very flattering. Thank
but
you.
But I thought, this guy knows exactly. He's got a sharp brain on him, so I've got to get this guy on. So thanks for, you know, answering my request, Russ. So essentially, we're going to be looking at a couple of stocks now. I major basically on smaller cap stocks, but people often say, let's have a bit of variety. So I thought, I know, I got Russ on, he can cover this off, no problem. So stocks you're looking at, Russ, and what are you looking at? What's taking your interest at the moment?
I mean, I think on the small cap space, the one that's kind of catching my eye at the moment is Watkins Jones, which is an AIM quoted company, market cap about 375 million quid, and it's basically a builder. I know there's lots of excitement about the government white paper on building right now. And also, we've had some very good results from Redrow recently. But Watkins Jones has got a bit of a niche. It's really specialising in building accommodation for students particularly. There's a little bit of nursing in there as well. There's a tiny bit of residential in there. But I think what's interesting about this one is it's relatively new to the market, so it's not that well known. It only quoted last March. It's just produced its maiden set of numbers. Sales were up 9%. Operating profit was up 17%. And I think what was intriguing was there was good forward visibility for the year that's just begun. They've actually forward sold a number of developments, and not that common for an AIM stock. There's about a 4.5% dividend yield on there with 2x earnings cover. So I'm not saying it's going to knock the lights out, But for income hunters, there's potential for income. For capital growth hunters, I think there's potential for steady capital growth there. Now, some people don't like family companies, some people do. Mm-hmm. Those who say don't like them think, hang on a minute, just because his name is Watkin Jones doesn't mean he or she's going to be the best person to run the company, right?
Yeah.
But I always take the opposite view, which is, hang on a minute, in this case, you've got a ninth generation family member running the company. The one thing they're not going to do is do anything that bets the farm. So I think what you are going to have is a natural safety net there, in that they're not going to do anything foolish, really big acquisition, lash out and do something daft. So I think that also gives you some degree of security on the downside, that there isn't going to be anything coming straight out of left field to spoil what looks like a pretty solid long-term investment case.
Yeah, when your name's above the door, you don't want to, you know, threaten your reputation there. And also, I'd assume, I'm just assuming this, obviously do your own research on this, I assume they probably hold a bit of stock in the company, you know? So
I would imagine, yes, absolutely. So in that, again, in that respect, I mean, there are lots of other companies like that. I mean, Henry Boots, the Sheffield property and company and builder's been another good example of a long-run family company not going to do anything very foolish. Again, it isn't going to, you know, knock the lights out on the upside, but you're going to have plenty of downside protection there. Yes, there'll be swings in the cycle, but they aren't going to go looking for trouble by doing daft things like gearing up the balance sheet for the sake of it.
You know, I'm looking at the chart there, and they had a nice upward rise on the 17th of January, 17th, and that's when their finals came out. So you've got to assume that's based on good figures, you know? So
yeah, there's been a bit of a pop there, so you might want to wait for a bit of, I mean, it is trading at pretty much an all-time high of 147, just under 150p right now. But again, it's still only on 10 times forward earnings with that well-covered yield of north of 4%. I don't think that's particularly bad value. Again, I guess if there's a worry, you know, people are wondering, oh my goodness, what's going to happen to student volumes in a post-Brexit world? Mm. Let's see. I mean, the company have addressed that in some of their presentations, though, that it seemed too distressed. You know, they actually think that there's a potential upside there. But if there is a worry, that's possibly it, I would suspect.
Marvellous. That's WJG. What's the next one you're looking at there, Russ?
I think we should probably have a look at GB Group, which is a different type of stock altogether, and it's much more of a momentum, earnings-driven type story. It's Chester-based. I know that there's always that old market saying, never catch a falling knife. And, you know, GB did actually disappoint its investors in the second half of last year. There was a slip in the earnings. First half sales growth was still 9%. And a lot of companies would be, you know, pretty chuffed to see that right now. Mm-hmm. But there was a slippage in a major government IT project. And, you know, that won't be the last time that we hear that from companies in the IT space. But, you know, GB therefore did, the shares did take a hammering because it is on quite a high rating, something around 30 times forward earnings. But it's in a very hot area, online identity verification. We all know the government's got very strong plans to roll out nationwide ID systems there, and even more without that, there's a very broad base of private companies who use the company's products and services. It's on AIM, it's profitable. The dividend yield isn't anything fat at one, just under 1%, but it is but the dividend growth has been consistent. And I think if you forgive the company for what looks like a one-off stumble, then I think with that strong momentum, with new boss Chris Clark coming in from April, he's a former Experian man, the FTSE 100 company, so I'm sure he's going to bring some very strong ideas. I think for momentum players who are looking for some earnings growth and are prepared to, you know, slightly hold their nose on the valuation side, might be one worth doing some research on.
Yeah, there was quite a big dip there, wasn't there?
It was horrid.
So 360 and then it just dropped down to almost 220, just below that. They're starting to recover now, but it's consolidating a bit, so always a good time to look at the thing, I think. When they're consolidating on the chart there, it's always worth looking at it, because you can see a support level and resistance level, and you can see, you know, if they break up above now, what is it, £3, then they should go higher, hopefully, you know. So
I mean, certainly if they can prove that was a bit of a blip on the government side, and, you know, and they are in an incredibly hot area, there's very strong earnings growth forecast, the multiple comes down to the low 20s in a couple of years time based on consensus forecasts. So if you do get that kind of momentum, I think that's the sort of thing that people are still casting around for. And certainly if you get any wobble in the Trump reflation trade and people think, oh, the cycle's not going to bail us out, then things that can potentially provide secular organic growth will remain extremely highly prized. And I think GB potentially falls into that area.
Marvellous. That's GBG ticker. And what's the last one, Russ?
Last card factory, greetings cards. We've got Valentine's Day coming up, so let's talk greeting cards, shall we?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Will you be sending any?
You don't sound so excited about Valentine's Day.
Well, do you know what? luckily, I'm married to a lady who hates cards, so she says it's a waste of money.
Aww.
And even at Christmas time, you know, I'll ask her what she wants. She says, oh, just give me cash.
And, that'll be fair enough.
Because she's a good bargain hunter, and if I buy something, in this, you know, she'll say, I could have bought that 20% cheaper in the sales. So, you know, I never get to thank you for buying presents. So she's not a big fan of cards. But, yeah, how are cards doing? How are Card Factory doing?
Well, this stock will be one for her then anyway.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, I think, in fairness, you've summed it up. I mean, this is not going to be a company that's going to grow terribly quickly. I mean, it's got sales of £400 million. Mm. It's got a very strong high street presence where some of its rivals are frankly struggling. It's got its website's getting personal.co.uk and cardfactory.co.uk are gathering momentum. Boss Karen Hubbard is very much talking about a multi-channel approach for the company. The real secret to this one is the balance sheet's pretty sound. There's very limited debt, barely 100 million quid. It pays a, you know, sort of 3.5% to 4% dividend yield with good earnings cover of sort of 3x. But in the last 2 years, the company's chucked off that much spare cash. It's been a 15p a share special dividend. Oh. Now, if you add that in, you're actually ending up with a 24p dividend on a £2.40 share price. So you're looking at a yield of 10%. Now, even that's not guaranteed to happen, but certainly looking at the steady as she goes trading statement we've had recently, you know, you've got to be quietly hopeful. But even if that doesn't happen, you've got a 4% yield to rely on straight away with decent cash flow. And obviously, if you do get the special, then quite frankly, happy days. And I think that's probably, you know, it's a solid income stock, well run, balance sheet's fine. Again, it isn't going to go bananas on the growth side, particularly with your missus involved. But nevertheless, I think it is a potential winner in what is a tough market, potentially. As rivals fall by the wayside, it's going to be one of those standing, and it's going to keep on chucking out plenty of cash and some dividend yield. So one for patient income seekers to recycle and harvest those dividends.
Yeah, do you know what? I quite like the chart on this because, you know, when I often look at investing, I think that, you know, there's nothing more important than the share price. Now, I often say you can buy a very good company at the wrong price. You know, if it's rallied strongly, it can pull back, and you can also buy a rubbish company at a very good price. But if you get the combination right and you buy a good company at a good price, then you can. And right now, it's bumping along at 240. It seems to be a support level there at 240, and I'm thinking it may stay down there for a while. Because the moving averages are all pointing downwards. It's not in an uptrend at all yet. But yet, we may be starting to see a bottom here, 240, you know, and obviously you can never swear on that, but it looks an interesting space. And
I mean, it's certainly been tarred with a broader retail brush, I think. I mean, I know we got some decent trading statements from some of the biggies coming out of Christmas, but that was relative to low expectations. And, you know, Next and Dunelm have actually, again, disappointed on the retail side. I think a lot of the other retailers who did well probably benefited more from the demise of VHS than they were prepared to let on. Because the overall retail spending numbers still aren't fantastic. And overall, as we know, domestic players have been ignored because of the Trump trade. People have been falling over themselves to buy dollar players, exporters and companies with overseas assets. The domestic players have been involved. And I think if there is value in the UK market right now, that's probably where it is. I think you're right with the chart. It's bumping along. You're kind of stuck for a catalyst for what's going to make people think, hang on a minute, this stock really is potentially very cheap. Yeah. I think it will just come down to them showing, look, the sales are jogging along quite happily. The bottom's not dropping out of the market. We're still chucking out plenty of cash. And by the way, here are your nice, safe dividends. Thank you very much. So I think it is a slow burner.
Lovely. Card, which is a nice, appropriate ticker there.
Yes.
Russ, I knew you were good. And if you have the time or inclination, I'd like to get you back on. And
I'd be delighted. Excellent. We'll get you everywhere.
I'll send you a card. Russ, thanks for that. And hopefully chat again very soon.
I look forward to it. Take care.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. Here, right, Al.
Good morning, Jess, from the freezing South Coast. Yes, I'm
good. It is
good.
A bit chilly, isn't it? The weather this year has been cold, 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 wet, cold, cold, wet, cold, freezing, cold, wet.
And not necessarily in that order.
Yeah, we've had a bit of sun, but I don't mind it as long as it's dry. I prefer cold to wet, you know, anything but wet.
Me too, yeah.
I can't operate in that. So anyway, what stocks are you looking at today?
Okay, got a handful I'm going to run through for you. Firstly, I just wanted to go back to Advanced Oncotherapy, AVO. Listeners will be familiar with this company. Now, we mentioned last week the Sinopharm termination of contracts. AVO have had to pay their deposit back. But also this week we had the eminent surgeon, Dr. Nick Plowman, not only sort of adding to his shareholding, he now owns 2.6 million shares, 3.6%. He's now been appointed as non-exec director to the board of Advanced Oncotherapy. And I just wanted to reiterate my point that clearly with people of this caliber joining the board, the prospects for advanced oncotherapy have to be very bright. I mean, Nick Plowman is an eminent surgeon attached to Great Ormondsley Hospital and Barts as well. So the announcement really sort of runs through his resume, but I think it's important that anyone wondering about the future of advanced oncotherapy should really take comfort from that.
Yeah, well, so, do you know what the funny thing is? When you see a company on AIM, or anyway, it's a non-revenue generating company and they sign someone good, it's almost like a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because what happens is you go, oh, that's good signing. And then you think, hang on, how much does he cost? So you think, it's good for the company, but then he comes with a bit of a bill for his wage, I suppose. So, so there you go. So, but it's good to have good people on rather than cheap rubbish people, I suppose, you know?
Well, that's the thing. I think yes, obviously there are some costs here, but he's also bought shares as well. So, yes, he may be being paid, but he's also bought shares as he joined the company. So that's obviously a good thing. And I said before, the board does read like a who's who of those at the forefront of cancer research and medical science.
So where are they now with the machines, though? I mean, do they have any contracts there? What can I know Sanofi thing was agreement was terminated. So what's the deal here? Have they got Harley Street, haven't they? When is that up and running?
That'll be up and running March next year, so that's still about a year away, but that's full steam ahead. The position on Harley Street is sort of well documented. Planning permission, the company that owns the estate are working with them to fast track this and get the building process underway as soon as possible. We also know now, with the Sinopharm contract ending, the new CEO Nicolas Serendur is actually putting feelers out and pushing sales teams out into China and into the Middle Eastern markets to further the cause. So I would expect that we'll hear some progress, news on progress and further commitments or commitments to buy the machines as we go forward. But clearly, at this stage, I think we can look at this appointment as further reassurance that AVO are going down the right road.
Yeah. And I don't know, do they have any other contracts in the US or anything or what?
There are no contracts, no firm sales contracts at this point, but that's why Nicolas Serendur was brought in the CEO last year to fast track that process and make things happen. So I think it is in many ways a jam tomorrow situation, but clearly the machine that's installed at Harley Street will be the flagship product. So I would conclude that once that machine is up and running, it will be the flagship offering. So any organizations considering purchasing one of the machines will be able to come to London, see it in action and so on. So we are getting there, sure.
And on the chart, it's interesting to see that it's heading towards that original sort of low at the moment. It's 65 pence at the moment. It did hit sort of just below 50, 49 pence. Be interesting to see if that, because if it stays there again, that's a decent support level. And the chart hasn't really finished or completed its bottoming out process, I don't think. But it'd be interesting to see if that holds that support there on about the 55, 50 pence level, you know?
Yeah, well, I said this before. These machines sell for $40 million each. So the market cap of AVO is roughly one machine at the moment, just over. So there's little or no upside priced in. But clearly, investors want to see progress with orders and so on before that. But I think we can take comfort from these appointments and the fact that the medical industry, the medical industry network is well aware of the potential of the machine and the fact that so many eminent persons are now on board. Is a very good thing.
Marvellous. What's the next stock, Al?
Bargain Booze. Do you remember that, Joss?
Bargain Booze, yes.
The
company of running that Conviviality, you know, just amusing in its opposition, the contrary sort of thoughts that it provokes from those two words. Bargain Booze, which you know what it is, it's booze in a bargain, and Conviviality, very middle class sort of hairy fairy type word, isn't it? So
It is. But I'll tell you what, this company has delivered, and how it made it acquired last year the drinks wholesalers Matthew Clark and Bibendum, and it's now divided the company into three sectors. You've got Conviviality Retail, Conviviality Direct, and Conviviality Trading, which includes event arms such as Peppermint. But the company announced half year results a few weeks ago. Acquisitions have been integrated to the point where revenues were up to 211%, that's $782 million. Pre-tax profits quadrupled. And on the back of that, the dividend was doubled. The interim dividend was doubled to 4.2p. Now, that's pretty good because the acquisitions were made toward the end of last year. So they've not only bedded in, but they're delivering great numbers already onto the bottom line. Now, the company's got a market cap of $466 million, so to my mind, there's still quite a bit more upside here. And I was interested to note that Dr. David Paul at Vectorvest put out a note earlier on this year, this week on conviviality, saying that the earnings growth really underpins the progress that the shares have made. But even so, the Vectorvest system still has a valuation of 310p as opposed to the current 270p. So there's been a sharp move upwards this year on the back of those results. But I think we can expect to see further progress from this company, particularly given the amount of turnover the company has now and the fact that with the network they have, there are going to be greater economies of scale available to improve pre-tax profits, reduce running costs, and so on.
Yeah, cool. Bargain boots, can't go wrong with that under the umbrella of brands, you know. Okay, on the next, Al, what's off the next taxi off the rank?
Okay, next taxi off the rank. Right, this is, on the theme of growth UK companies. This is a company that was floated in 2013 at around £1.20 a share, a company called SafeStyle, S-F-E. Mm-hmm. This is a classic, traditional, dyed-in-the-wool UPVC window and door company that they have their own factory. They've just, in fact, built a new factory. They've got cash of $13 million on the books, down from $16 million. The $3 million was spent paying out a special dividend last year and also investing into the new factory. Shares have been as high as £3.13, as low as £2, just over £2. Currently trading just below £3. Again, trading updates on January 23rd, revenues up nearly 10%, pre-tax in line, frames, the amount of frames manufactured were up 3%, installations up nearly 5%, and we're in the run-up now to the full year results on the 23rd of March. Again, you look at the chart on this one, it's just a steady cash generator, and I do believe that if you're looking for a growth UK company, it may not deliver spectacular growth, but investors that took a chance and dipped in at just over £2 last year, that would have been last summer, will now be sitting on a decent gain. Not to mention the fact they've also got the this dividend yield 3.5% too. So again, it's a steady growth UK company. Your brokers are supporting the stock too. We've got broker Liberum saying recommending the stock as a buy with a £3.35 price target.
Marvellous. Is that SFE? Is that right? SFE?
SFE is the Epic code.
Cool.
Yep, that's
cool.
It.
Yeah, nice. And the last one, what are you looking at, Al?
Well, the final one is ARS, A-R-S, Asia Met.
I beg your pardon.
Asia Met Resources.
Do you hold any of these stock, Al? Do you hold any Asia Met?
You mentioned this stock to me before, and I was in the process of reaching my portfolio. It was on a list of stocks to buy, and I didn't buy them when they were at around 3p, and I'm furious because, 2.5, 3p, because today the stock's up 8%. It's trading at 5p, 31 million. This is a company operating in a region with which I'm fairly familiar, which is they're a copper and gold miner in Indonesia. They've got three copper mines at Berawang, Kuman Main, and Butong Mineral Resource. They also have a gold prospect at Jalai. And it's run by CEO Tony Manini, who is a fairly mercurial character. The company put out, the company raised $2 million last year at 2.5p. Wish I'd taken part in that, but there we go. Raised $2 million last year at 2.5p to develop the gold mine. And already yesterday we had an upgrade on the copper resource. The company said that it was finding high-grade copper and was upgrading the resource accordingly, which has obviously driven the share price forward today. But also, very importantly for that region, AsiaMet have an outstanding track record in working with the community and social development there. A lot of the company officers are local people, and that's very important if you're developing a company in that region. And Tony has really got this nailed down tightly. So shares currently trading, well, they've been as high as just under 6p, but currently trading at 5p, and clearly there's an awful lot more to come with a market cap of just 31 million.
Yeah, do you know what? I know AsiaMet very well. I've had Tony Manini on the podcast, one of the first guys to come on the podcast, you know, long ago. I've had Stephen, VP of Exploration there, and I've just trusted these guys from the start. I met them earlier on at an investor, in fact, one of Big Gibbs' mentors originally. But I held these below, you know, I think 1.5p I was buying at originally, and I kept buying there, and I just liked them. They shot up to that over some 5p almost, then came back down. And I've held and added to them in the last year or so, just patience, because, you know, the assets there, it's the tip of the iceberg. What they're revealing at the moment, which are fantastic grades, by the way, it's BKM, that's the main zone of BK.
Yeah.
Now, they got BK, they got BK South. They got BKZ, they got BK North, they've also got Baroil, whatever, and Bhutong, which is 4 or 5 times the size of BK in itself. They got July, which is their gold asset, which I think they're going to be disposing of for a bit of cash as well. And I think we're really now starting to see the tip, you know, they're revealing the tip of the iceberg here, of the Goldberg. And of the copper gold, of the copper Goldberg they've got there, and Tony Manini, look at his track record. He's involved in Oxiana, which went from 3 million market cap to 6 billion market cap, and this is in the same area as what he's doing now. And he's always said all along, he said this is the best time to buy assets is when the copper is, you know, underpriced. It's all cyclical commodities, and he said this is the best time to start building a project is when no one values copper, and then when the copper price goes up, all of a sudden, you know, exponentially, the value of your asset will go up and people want to buy it off you. When you were approaching people beforehand, when people weren't interested, now they're trying to, you know, they're biting your hand off for it, you know. And he said he intends to do this. And he said, and copper's had a little rise. And he said, you haven't said nothing yet. Once it moves, it moves. And, you know, we got these strikes going on. But essentially, when I did a little bit of research on AsiaMet, I discovered that people argue about the dynamics of the supply demand, you know, coefficient there, that how it reacts, the relationship. Mm-hmm. But what everyone agrees on is that copper grades are becoming, you know, less and less as time goes on. And so what happens is people have to dig further down to get copper. This makes, you know, capital expenditure go up at every mine. Yep. But here in AsiaMet, they've got some excellent, you know, high-grade copper at low levels, you know, very near surface. So in the cost curve, they're very low. So they are now profitable right now. They can be profitable right now, you know, where the copper is. But, you know, copper is expected to go a lot higher. But I just think it's a lovely little play. And I've had it for, you know, over a year, way over a year now. And I just think they're an excellent play. Like I said, I recommended them to you a while back, Al. I didn't recommend. I said, do some research on them. Of course, we don't recommend stocks. But, you know... I just think
my loss.
Now we're having a bit of a rally. You know, I do believe at the start of a very news-rich period, but like all stocks, once you have a super rally, and the RSI on the chart is over 85, you know, so it may have a little consolidation period here. But, you know, generally, I think we're at the start. There's still a 30 million market cap around. So, you know, I think Tony has the potential to take this a lot further because they've got a multitude of assets in that area. And it's an area they're very well, you know, rehearsed at. They know the area, it's their backyard. Stephen there has lived there for, you know, 20 years and he's worked for all the big guys. And so I have complete confidence in this company and the management there taking this on to further bigger levels. It's a start of a story here. But like I said,
it's an exciting play, isn't it?
I mean, in the short term, like I always say, try and avoid buying spikes. But, you know, avoiding that, this is a good long-term play, I believe, you know. You can't fault it. The ticker code, ARSE. You can't fault that, can you?
ARSE. You can't go wrong.
Exactly. marvellous. Al, thanks for that. Speak next week, fella. Have a nice weekend.
Thanks a lot, Just. You too. Have a good weekend.
Okay, it's time for the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. Don't forget, anything you hear in this podcast is not intended as investment advice, just information on which to base your research. But when I do these lists, I would look into companies that appear regularly on this list are worth looking at. So check out the blog, check out previous blogs, and you know, basically people follow these companies because there's a lot of interest in there. Why? Because they have potential to be a good investment. But that's where your investment comes in, of course. Now, at five, Amir Minerals. That's AMC. At four, Horizonte Minerals, HZM. At three, I checked a mark on the podcast earlier, the People's Operator, T-Pop. And at two, Hydrodeck, HYR. And number one most followed stock in the last 24 hours was Blenheim Natural Resources, BNR is the ticker there. Okay, here are the most liked RNSs on the platform today. At five, or in the last 24 hours, I should say, Proxama, Prox, Holdings in Company. At four, Metal Tiger. I'm a tiger, a metal tiger. Probably needs oiling every now and again, I suppose. It's MTR, Thailand Timeline. Amir Minerals, AMC, Kunmani Resource Update. And number two, Premier African Minerals, PREM, Circa Minerals Update. And number one, the most liked RNS this morning on the Vox Markets platform here was Talao Energy, Performance Rights Update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Muchos appreciatos.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.